Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, tennis is back, and so is the Tennis Podcast, not only for the second time in 2 days, but actually for the second time in 1 day, because full disclosure, this is our second time recording this particular podcast because of a technological malfunction for whose blame there is no need to... there's no need to be specific about where blame lies, I don't think.
No, I'd agree. I mean, it wasn't Catherine's recorder that just broke down, completely wiped out an hour's worth of podcast at all. So here we are, and let's do it all again. Nobody will know any different.
David has gone from crestfallen to pumped in record time. This is a really different David Law to the one that we were experiencing about 2.5 hours ago.
Ashen-faced.
It's like your turnaround on Jennifer Brady from middling American not having a good run in a pandemic to world beater, going to win everything.
Yeah, you're saying I flip-flop, which is true, but I like to look at it as I'm able to make a comeback. That's what it is.
I've never been more grateful for pumped David Law than right now. Not because I'm to blame for the malfunction.
You feeling, right?
Not for that reason.
Well, David's drawing on experience. David has been in this situation before and re-recorded a podcast that he's recorded. This is my first time doing that.
Is it?
I think so. Don't think we've had any big technical errors in the last couple of years.
David and I once had to re-record a podcast twice. And I'm trying to remember, David, whether we confessed to that at the time.
Yeah, I think so. But that time it was my recorder that went AWOL. And actually, we did it twice and we didn't have any chance to do what I've just done, which is go and have a 2.5 hour walk on my own and just recover. On that occasion, we had a very small window of time and we built in 3.5 hours to have a chat and then a podcast and then another chat. And instead, we did three back-to-back podcasts with absolutely no gaps between them whatsoever.
All covering the same material, recycled gags, everything.
Yeah.
It was a well-oiled machine by the end.
When the second one went kaput, I said, I think I know what it is. I'll put it right and let's just press record. And Catherine just got up and went and ordered another cup of tea. And she said, just give me a minute.
And I came back and I was pumped for me.
See? Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it's right. A real test, isn't it, of how much we like podcasting,
how much we like each other. Now, I know what you're all thinking. You're thinking, well, if you've already recorded this podcast, you'll definitely know which players are in which draws. You'll be right on top of everything that's going on. You'll have the Australian Open draw memorized. Well, I'm here to disappoint you, but I will give it my very, very best shot. We're going to start off just as we did earlier by talking about the tennis that is happening, has happened overnight, UK time, some this morning. Matt was up at what time? Following the tennis?
5 a.m.
He didn't even set an alarm, folks. His internal body clock knew that a Grand Slam draw was happening.
Yeah, which was incredible, really, because I had consciously decided to ignore the Australian Open draw because we'd heard from Craig Tiley a couple of days ago that it was going to take place at 2 a.m., 3 a.m. UK time. And I just thought, it's fine. I don't have to follow it. I can leave it, wake up in the morning and see it. It'll be fine. But I woke up at 5 a.m., just happened to, and the draw was starting. So I thought I might as well watch it. And then it was geo-blocked for the first 10 minutes. So I kind of missed the women's draw.
Your subconscious, Matt, is even more of a tennis nerd than your conscious.
Yeah, it is. It's putting me to shame.
Which is really quite something. I want to meet your subconscious.
What's my subconscious up to?
He's pumped.
Well, you're up as well, David.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have got one.
He's just not ever getting any sleep, your subconscious. Yeah, so tennis is back. It's back because mercifully and I suppose luckily, because it does feel like a massive bullet dodged, banana skin swerved. None of the 600 players and staff and tournament support workers that were housed in the Grand Hyatt Hotel in Melbourne during their 14-day quarantine period have tested positive. Subsequent to that mandatory testing and isolation period until returning a negative test, which meant that the six warm-up tournaments taking place at Melbourne Park this week were able to resume after that 24-hour hiatus. Now, we came to you yesterday saying, look, that's best-case scenario, but there are a whole heck of a lot of worst-case scenarios as well, which Tennis Australia were probably furiously planning for overnight. But thank goodness none of those have come to fruition as it stands at the moment, and I'm touching wood as I say this, there have been no further positive tests in the community in Melbourne, which is extraordinary, and long may that remain the case. We have just had the news, which totally validates our doing this podcast again, because we didn't have this news earlier, and it's very exciting. That what mask wearing will be mandatory at the Australian Open for fans when matches are played indoors. So when the roofs are closed on either the Rod Laver Arena, the Yvonne Goolagong Arena, or the John Cain Arena, nailed it, mask wearing will be mandatory inside those arenas.
Yeah. Oh, it's all worth it, wasn't it? This 2.5 hour wait to do it all over again. Do you know what you were saying? I agree with you that it's lucky that this has not led, so far at least, to any spreading of the infection. And Craig Tiley did make the point in that same article that we were reading about the roof and the mask wearing that it might not be okay tomorrow. There may still be something that happens from this. We know that's a possibility. I do feel that they deserve a bit of luck. I really do. They're pulling all the stops out. They're trying their very best to stage this thing. They're trying to stage it responsibly in conjunction with the Victorian authorities. And really, you know, it's such a difficult balance to find, and they're walking this tightrope. And I feel that they deserve a bit of luck. Maybe that's just because I want it to be okay and because I love the sport and want it to happen and all the rest of it. But good luck to them.
I think planet Earth deserves a bit of luck, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
But we at least have had a small slice of luck and it has allowed tennis to resume. And that means that, where should we start? I'll pick one at random. We'll start in Gippsland, which is not actually in Gippsland. It's in Melbourne. But it is the Gippsland Trophy. And the semi-final lineup is thus. It will be Ekaterina Alexandrova, who beat Simona Halep for the loss of just three games early this morning, UK time. She'll be taking on Kaya Kanepi. Kanepi got a walkover in her quarterfinal match. Karolina Mukova pulled out ahead of that one. And the second semi-final will be Naomi Osaka. She got the better of Arina Camelia Begu and Elise Mertens, who beat Alina Svitolina just in a match that we were watching live during our first version of this podcast.
Yeah, that's fun, isn't it?
We could recreate that if you want. We could.
We don't have to do soon to be out of date tennis news. No. We can give actual tennis news.
Yes, should we do? It looks like Elise Mertens is going to choke. Oh, no, she's won. That was the vibe, anyway.
The Alexandrova results is the most notable because Simona Halep, I'd say Rafael Nadal aside, is the one that is a little bit jarring and alarming in terms of injury worries ahead of the Australian Open happening. Because, as you say, three games, I joined it when she was 6-2-3 love down. She was feeling that lower back. She wasn't right, Simona Halep. Hope that's just temporary because, you know, it's been so good to have her looking happy to be back. She sort of typifies and personifies the feeling of tennis being back to me, the way she's come out onto the court with this massive smile and loved to be there. Here she's been looking miserable today against Alexandrova, who played blooming well, but still.
Mm. I saw that scoreline and went back and caught that 5-minute highlights package on the WTA YouTube channel, which they seem to be doing for every match, or certainly every notable match, and it really is helpful. She took a 2-love lead in the opening set in that match, Halep, and was really pumped. She was fist pumping all the time. Darren Cahill was there looking right into it, totally normal service. And then Alexandrova started pumping some winners, as she does, swiping away. And Halep was just stood stock still a lot of the time, watching them glide past her. There was a lot less hustle and a lot less scramble than we're used to seeing from Simona Halep. She was still hitting some great shots and some winners here and there, but it was more about what she wasn't doing than what she was doing that was alarming. Without the hustle and the scramble, who is Simona Halep? So I desperately hope that she can get herself right for next week, but that is a major source of concern. Osaka, I thought, looked very good against Begu, still not full flow, but sort of improving with every match, would you say, Matt?
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment. I think she said her second set was the best one she'd played so far in Australia. She'd never played Begu before, so it took a little bit of time to adjust to that matchup, I think, but she's looking excellent. She's now on a 14-match winning streak, Naomi Osaka. The last time she lost a tennis match, we're recording this on the 5th of February, 2021. The last time she lost a tennis match was the 7th of February, 2020, when she lost to Sara Cerebes Tormo in Fed Cup.
So she could go a full calendar year.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it was a curtailed season, and there was a big chunk of that where tennis was missing. And it's actually only a 14-match win streak, but it does pretty much amass to 365 days.
That's a bit of a sort of Andreescu-like stat, isn't it? Remember when she won the US Open and there was that stat that she hadn't lost a completed match for 9 months or something like that. A sort of slightly asterisky but very eye-catching, dazzling stat.
Exactly, yes. And we now use asterisks.
We do,
don't we?
We're so, into them. Yeah. She's definitely been to the pandemic or no pandemic. She's definitely gone to the Serena Williams School of Scheduling, Naomi Osaka, because she's already announced and confirmed that her next tournament after the Australian Open will be Miami. She's got no intention of playing any of the other events scheduled between now and then. But she looks in fine and increasingly fine fettle in not Gippsland.
And I thought it was a good win for Mertens as well. I mean, yes, she was getting really tight down the stretch there, trying to close that match out. She had 3 match points in the second set, ended up losing that set. But for Mertens, that's exactly the sort of win she needs over Svitolina, a top 10 player. She has admitted that herself. She needs to beat more of those players. And she's got another chance now against Osaka. I suspect Osaka will be too strong for her, but it's nice to see Mertens playing well.
Mm. You'll notice, by the way, I'm saying Gippsland rather than Gippsland, as I was previously saying. That's because after thinking that I'd nailed the whole Gippsland thing, still I received a message from somebody saying, I really hate to inform you, but it is actually Gippsland and not Gippsland. Soon I'll get a message saying, you really need to be saying it in an Australian accent. I really am trying to win back the affections of all Gippslanders.
Can you say it in an Australian accent?
Gippsland. Nailed it again. Okay, on to the Yarra Valley Classic.
Yeah.
You can tell I've done this twice today, can't you? That's not how it sounded earlier on.
We had five takes of that one earlier, I'm telling you.
Where,
so, you know, we're already saving time here, which I'm wasting talking right now.
We're trucking along really well, aren't we? Where Ash Barty is already a finalist because not only did she beat Shelby Rogers in her quarterfinal on Friday, but... Why are you both laughing at me? Come on, this is the smoothest this has ever been. Stop.
Sorry, David just really made me laugh then when he said he was wasting time talking.
Matt's on board with my dad jokes, Catherine.
I was just moving smoothly on. On to Yarra Valley, where, as I was saying, Ash Barty not only beat Shelby Rogers to make it through to the semi-finals, but has also received a walkover through to the final because Serena Williams, after beating Danielle Collins in a deciding third set tiebreak earlier on today, then withdrew ahead of the scheduled semi-final with Ash Barty, citing a shoulder problem. David, how long did you get to be pumped about the prospect of Serena against Barty before you became crestfallen again?
Oh, yeah, I had a little bit of time, 20 minutes, something like that, because Tamani Karyal from The Guardian tweeted, and that was actually the first time I realised that Serena Williams had played and won. Things were happening so quickly. And also, the other thing is, like Matt, I woke up around the 5 o'clock mark. You wake up and you've already had, there's been 6-7 hours of tennis by then. So much has happened that you, especially if there's 6 tournaments in a week. And I really couldn't figure out where we were. But he tweeted that and the mouth waters. He said, imagine that first big tournament of the year. And we've got this to look forward to. And within half an hour, WTA insider account had put out that Williams was out with a shoulder injury. Now, obviously, it was a pretty long, hard, grueling match with Collins, relatively speaking, and it probably would have been against Barty as well. So hopefully Serena's not too badly hurt. I do feel that there's quite a decent chance that it might be sore and that she's maybe just playing the percentages here at this stage in her career. I mean, she turns 40 this year, Serena Williams. And, you know, the only thing she's really out here for is to try to win a Grand Slam title, with all due respect to the Yarra Valley Classic and everything else. You know, tennis, aside from the slams, for her, when all said and done, much as she enjoys it, it's irrelevant. She has to win another slam. She has to, in her mind. And hopefully too, for her peace of mind and, you know, her position without asterisks of any type in the sport. And so if pulling out of this match against Barty just improves her physical condition, maybe saves her from a beating, perhaps if Barty was too good for her on the day and just keeps that little bit of aura around her because she's looked good so far this week, you know, maybe all of that factors in.
Yeah, bottom line, Serena Williams isn't going to make any decisions which jeopardise her chances of winning a Grand Slam. Nothing else is a factor for her, and I respect that as much as I'm gutted not to be seeing Serena Williams against Ash Barty. We will be seeing, though, Marketa Vondroušová, who is a thing again, out of nowhere, taking
That's
on...
That's her style.
That is her style, isn't it? Yeah. We need to forget all about her and then she'll creep up on us and surprise us. I mean, that is precisely what has happened. She'll be taking on Garbiñe Muguruza, who has been impressive, really impressive, all week, in fact, Matt.
Yeah, a sort of path of destruction behind Muguruza this week. Her 6 set scores, 6-2, 6-love, 6-1, 6-2, 6-2, 6-2.
Oof.
And those are against some really quality opponents in Alison van Oytvank, Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, and today Sofia Kenin in a rematch of that Australian Open final last year. Another pulsating clash so early in the season. And I mean, Muguruza was awesome throughout, really, really good. She looks so fit, so strong, so happy, so ready for the start of this season. Kenin had a little fight back in the second set after, I think, Muguruza had won 7 games in a row in sort of the middle of the match. Kenin had a fight back, made it tough, got the break back, and Muguruza just stepped up another level. She was, you know, that perfect combination when she's on. She's sort of smooth and effortless looking the way she hits her ground strokes, but really powerful and sort of following them with lots of forward momentum and hitting loads of drive volleys. And it was just a real joy to watch her play like that. It'll be tricky against Vondrousova, different style of opponent, lots more variety. If there is a little weakness in Muguruza's game, it probably is a little lack of variety sometimes. And maybe Vondrousova and certainly Ash Barty in the final will probably be looking to exploit that. But yeah, Muguruza is looking excellent for sure.
And seeing her at the moment really emphasizes for me how much of a shadow of herself she was for really, really quite a long time. She looked so listless and unhappy and lacking in purpose and drive on the tennis court for a long time. She looked kind of vacant. And it's just so good to see her looking herself again and her best self again.
Because I feel you can forget what she was like before she really... Well, when she was coming on the scene and when she reached her first Wimbledon final, for instance, I remember going to her press conference before the final. They do the pre-final presser the day before. And I'd never gone in one before with her, and full house, which she was amused by. And she was just really great company for 15 minutes. You know, it was just uplifting to see this person who's just up for it and really into it and really interested in the questions and taking them all on their merit, because that changed. And she stopped being engaged with the media. She stopped looking, as you say, happy on the court. I think she'd had a couple of bad experiences here and there with the media. But I also, something wasn't right. I don't know what. I don't know the ins and outs of her life. It's none of my business, but she didn't look happy. And this is a woman that I thought would be the one to pick up the mantle from Serena Williams when she won that French Open and then won Wimbledon, and she got to world number one, and she got everything. On paper, she's got everything. And yet for 3 to 4 years, she's just looked nothing like the same player and nothing like the same person. And if she's going to be more like she was, then great, because she's such a fantastic person to have on the tour.
And with all due respect for Vondrousova, I am very much up for a Muguruza Barty final of that Yarra Valley Classic. I think that would really set the season on fire. I mean, it might not be the best news for those two players, you know, right on the eve of a slam. It's a jam-packed schedule already. But for us, it's great. So thanks very much for that. I mean, Vondrousova against Barty, that'd be great as well. But, yeah, I will try not to insult Vondrousova any more than I already have. The Grampians Trophy? You've just put Grampians in the notes, Matt, and it caught me out earlier and it's caught me out again.
I'm happier with the Hard Quarantine Cup.
Hard Quarantine Cup, but, or HQC as I called it earlier. I think it might be the Grampians Trophy.
I think you're right. I think it is the Grampians Trophy.
Yeah, I should have said it with more confidence first time around and you would have just accepted it and moved on. The Grampians Trophy is only at the quarterfinal stage. Now, we believe that they will play on Sunday. There aren't two matches scheduled tomorrow in the Grampians Trophy. So it does put these players at a slight disadvantage, I suppose you could argue. The quarterfinal lineup is Victoria Azarenka, who in her round of 16 match got the better of Yulia Putintseva in a match tiebreak. Putintseva had held match points and did not accept her defeat gracefully. It was just a beautiful display of lack of dignity and defeat.
Yeah, it was just like Catherine after the first recording.
Yep.
Of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Everything we're looking for in Putin Saver was
fantastic.
Right there.
So Azarenka will play Kontaveit. Quite similar styles for those two. Jennifer Brady alert, David. She's through to a quarterfinal. She'll play Barbora Krejcikova.
Yeah.
Then we've got Maria Sakkari taking on Angelique Kerber. That's tasty.
She's under the radar, isn't she? Kerber. Mm. She beat Ons Jabeur. Mm. That's a very good win, I think.
She loves to be under the radar. It's her preferred place.
Oh, but it's an odd year. But that kind of went out the window last year, didn't it? The even odd system.
Everything went out the window last year,
yeah,
Matt.
True.
And then the final quarterfinal is Saronika Steyer versus Anne Lee. And I will spare you all the gag I did earlier, because it was no good. So this is an opportunity to right past wrongs. Moving on to the men's, we'll start with the Great Ocean Road Open. Nailed it again.
Of course we will, yeah.
Where the semi-final lineup is thus: Thiago Monteiro against Stefan Travaglia.
I don't know too much about those two, to be quite honest. I'm looking forward to learning.
Well, Thiago Monteiro beat Carlos Alcaraz, of course, after we spent about 20 minutes yesterday bigging up Alcaraz.
Mm. So that means all three of my pre-tournament picks that I was considering, and I went for Konta, who lost in the first round, all of them have gone out before the semi-finals, which is a bit of a blow. Mm.
Yeah, you didn't see Travaglia coming, David. That was your problem.
Oh, why did I bring? I shouldn't have brought this up, folks, because these two have both got people in the latter stages.
Yes,
you've got Muguruza, Matt, and Barty Catherine.
Yes,
yes, you've got Daryl for company, David. Our newsletter predictions opponent for the year, and
was he rubbish as well?
I mean, no offence, Daryl. Daryl went for a terrible prediction. I really didn't think it was good at the time, but I let him have it.
Welcome to the party, Daryl.
He fits in, doesn't he?
What did he go for?
He went for France in the ATP Cup.
Oh, yeah, that was ludicrous.
That is mad, isn't it? I mean,
who did they lose to?
Everyone.
I mean, everyone.
Yeah.
Who's in the ATP Cup semis then?
Didn't
or am
Benoit
I jumping ahead?
Pair tank or something? Benoit Paire did something silly.
Probably.
I switched on the ATP Cup this morning and Gael Monfils was giving Benoit Paire a medical timeout. He was strapping up his arm and then about two games later, Paire retired.
And Monfils has decided against the career change.
Yeah.
Yeah. And okay, well, welcome to the club. Daryl.
Sorry, Daryl.
You're very welcome. The other semi-final in the Great Ocean Road Open. I keep wanting to call it the Great Open Road. It's Sinner, Jannik Sinner against Karen Khachanov.
Yes, please.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Mm.
Who do you think will win?
I think Sinner.
I think Sinner will win. I watched them play at the US Open, which was a match where Sinner was cramping terribly, and yet Khachanov kept hitting the ball straight to him. It was one of the most bizarre sets of tennis I've ever seen. And I just think if Sinner got that close to Khachanov when he couldn't move, I think when he can move, he will probably be a handful for him.
You can tell from Matt's reaction that he didn't hit the ball straight back to me when I was cramping horribly on our artificial...
You weren't
cramping. No, it wasn't artificial. Well, a bit.
Weren't actually cramping, were you?
I'd got a back problem, hadn't I?
He had a back problem after the match because of the heaviness of the defeat. You went into the match in full fitness.
Relatively speaking,
I thought the storyline we'd agreed on was that Matt ruined you.
Yeah. Although this back injury has come up David has mentioned that he was struggling with a back injury during the match.
So, you know, rematch is required and it has to be on artificial grass in order to save my back. So,
David, I've told you this before. The title holder sets the conditions for the rematch.
Like the America's
what,
Cup.
A challenge round or something.
They get to... I learned my dad is, in the absence of anything else to do, following very closely the America's Cup and the Prada Cup, which is the qualifying event for the America's Cup. And they, the holders decide pretty much everything in the America's Cup. They get to sort of set the parameters for the boats. So you, Matt, you could sort of tell David what racket he has to play with and that sort of thing.
Excellent.
Tell him what kitty has to wear. That would be the equivalent. fun to be had there anyway.
Right, who were we talking about?
We'll be talking more about Jannik Sinner in a short while because he features in the top picks for first round matches in the Australian Open draw. I'll leave you with that little tease for later. But first of all, to deal with the Murray River Open, where Dan Evans won twice on Friday. He'll play Jeremy Shardy in the semi-final. Shardy only having won once on Friday because his scheduled quarterfinal opponent, Stan Wawrinka, withdrew ahead of their quarterfinal. So Shardy through to the semis will face Dan Evans, who beat Borna Coric in straight sets earlier. Looked very impressive, did Dan Evans. David, would you like to deliver your savage monologue about Borna Coric for the second time today, please? Because it's unmissable.
Well, it's just that, I mean, it was a funny contrast because Dan Evans, you know what he's like, all fidgets and give me the ball and, oh, you know, I've hit that one, right, let's do the next point. And then you've got Borna Coric, who is going to get the ball. And he's going to, you know, just dust himself down and do everything in its own rightful place and bounce the ball and put another one in his pocket and eventually he will serve and then the point will take place and then he will do it all over again. And if you find yourself struggling to sleep at night, just pop on a Borna Coric match. You don't need any sound. You can just watch the images and it'll gently... It's not the tennis points. The points are fine. The points are fine. It's the preparation for the serve. It just lulls you off to sleep.
It's got more savage.
It did get more savage. It is. You say it's not the points that are the problem, but it is kind of consistent with his whole approach to tennis, isn't it? He's a very, very deliberate player. His strokes are really nice. His stroke production is really nice. He seems like a lovely chap. I wish him well. It's all very sort of smooth, but he very rarely does anything unexpected or surprising. There is a deliberacy about him.
After the service shenanigans, I'm so angry and frustrated. I've almost forgotten what's going on in the point. I'm like, just get on with it.
But do you feel that way when you watch Nadal?
That was my exact question.
No, because there's stuff happening. He's fidgeting. He's doing stuff.
What about Joe Konta?
I don't know. I guess I'm just used to it.
And very deliberate service motion.
I honestly, when I'm watching Coric, and I know this isn't the case, I almost think he's taking the piss. That he's saying. I know this is winding you up. I know it is.
And I don't I think he's straight. I think he's straight as an arrow.
So do I. But it's just watching it.
He beat, incidentally, his first match of the day, he beat Nick Kyrgios. We didn't cover this in version one. Do we have anything to say?
No. Hence why we didn't cover it in version one.
We've seen a still photo, which
yes,
potentially summarizes the match.
Kyrgios is not had hurt his. He was complaining about his leg. He's not happy, is he? I mean, he went in his press conference and he said, I got the gist that he thought he was sort of really touch and go as to whether he'll be competitive, even able to play. he doesn't seem in the greatest places. He needs to switch on some adrenaline from somewhere. Mm. He needs a crowd. He needs a crowd. Let's not forget, the guy has not played for a year. And he hasn't done all this sort of playing tennis with nobody around. I'm not sure that's going to work. So let's see.
And he needs a crowd both for his tennis and also, I think, for his, I don't want to say sense of self-worth, because I'm not sure it's quite that far, but it almost is. Like, he really prides himself on the fact that his matches are full. Doesn't matter who he's playing, there's people watching him. I remember there was a match he played at the US Open a couple of years ago. He was on the grandstand court. I think you talked about it on the podcast. The place was packed, and it was Kyrgios against an unseeded player. And he loves that. He lives off that when he's playing.
Yeah, I think as much as he likes to give the impression that he doesn't, I think he needs external validation. And
he needs a point, though. The point is the crowd. The point is the moment. The point isn't whether he wins or goes far in the tournament. He's made that perfectly clear, really. He wants the experience. He wants the rush of it all. So let's hope, for the sake of any entertainment from him, that that's what he gets.
Mm. What did we make of match point in Dan Evans against Borna Coric?
One of the strangest things I've ever seen, and totally unlike Borna Coric, as you've just described. He's methodical and not surprising. I must just insert that I would like to jump to Borna Coric's defence. I very much enjoy watching him play tennis, but you know, match point was totally bizarre. He had a very easy smash on top of the net, 6-1 down in the second set tiebreak. It looked like he'd given up, but even so, it was a strange way to give up. He just smashed the ball. I mean, I think deliberately. I'm sure he could have controlled that. It didn't look like it came off the frame. It looked like it came straight out off the strings. Just smashed the ball out of the court, and it hit the back fence on the full. I should say, dangerously close to the ball kid, which was...
Why am I laughing? I shouldn't be, but it was...
Well, Dan Evans was.
Yeah, Dan Evans was really
sniggering at him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to recycle a line I used in version one, because it was decent. I said he channeled Borna Coric, channeled an entire career's worth of spontaneity into just that one moment. Mm. And there's none left now, David. So you will keep snoozing through his matches.
Hmm.
So it is Dan Evans against Jeremy Shardy in the first semi-final. The second one, bottom half of the draw, features Felix Auger-Aliassime against Corentin Moutet, which brings up the prospect of an Evans-Moutet rematch. Of course, they played at the US Open, and it was highly entertaining. So we'll take that. And of course, Moutet also played Auger-Aliassime.
Yeah, and got hammered in that match. So, and that's what made us all start predicting Auger-Aliassime would win 28 Grand Slams.
Yes, including the one that he was in at the time. Yes, so that leaves us just in terms of current tennis. We've covered off five tournaments, which leaves us just with the ATP Cup, where the semi-final lineup is Germany against Russia. And Spain, Rafael Nadal less Spain. He's only on the sidelines, and that looks to be the case for the semi-finals as well. Spain against Italy.
How many out of 10 are you concerned about Nadal right now?
Pretty concerned. Pretty concerned.
Eight.
Yeah, eight. If it were Djokovic, it would be four. But Nadal needs matches. Nadal needs matches going into big tournaments. He needs momentum. He needs rhythm. He needs to play himself in. And I think he gave a quote, Matt, in Spanish, which certainly doesn't dampen any concerns.
Yeah, he said, "No estoy fatal. I'm not fatal. I'm not awful," is the translation of that. But then he said, I'm not in the right conditions to take to the court. So, I mean... on the 0 to 10 scale, that is definitely pushing towards 10, isn't it? With just a Grand Slam a couple of days away. There's probably two levels. Is he in danger of withdrawing from the event altogether, or is he in danger of just being totally undercooked for the event and not able to properly be himself? I'm certainly worried about number two, and as the days tick by, I'm getting concerned about the former as well. He's not said that a withdrawal from the Australian Open is a possibility. So I'm assuming he will play, but absolutely, Nadal needs matches.
Maybe he just loves coaching Roberto Bautista Agut.
Well, he definitely loves doing that.
Just doesn't want to give it up. But yeah, what would you have said, David, on the scale?
Yeah, I'd probably go 7 or 8. I'm concerned about now because I thought he might want to be sparing with how much he plays, but if he literally doesn't play a match before the Australian Open, there's a problem. There's a big problem. Because he just wouldn't do that. And you're hoping, therefore, that whatever sort of injury it is, that it just frees up and there's some relief. Oh, and because there's every other day matches, the best of five, you know, he may be able to just play his way in and get used to it. But, yeah, it's a real concern for him.
That's how I'm going to respond when people ask me, how are you? I'm not awful, but...
Not fatal.
Not fatal. Nois de fatal.
No.
No. Say it again.
No.
No.
Estoy.
Estoy. No estoy fatal. Yes.
Nailed it.
Great. That will be very useful for however long this pandemic lasts for. Hopefully. So Germany beat Serbia to book their place in the semi-final. You saw a few snapshots of that, David, in particular the deciding doubles rubber.
Yeah, very entertaining deciding doubles in which Novak Djokovic was trying to beat Germany on his own. No offence to his partner, but I mean,
what's his name?
Reasonable, I don't know, perfectly reasonable doubles player. What's his name, Matt?
I believe it's Nikola Kacic.
Oh, yes.
Kacic, that's the one. Look, I mean, you think he's top 50 in the world, doubles. So he's a decent player. But what happens when you get an absolutely top draw singles player a lot of the time, and particularly, I mean, Djokovic is the world number one, he just knows that he's capable of doing it all normally. So he kind of tries to do it in doubles as well, and he very nearly did. But eventually, Zverev and Struff, better team, I felt, and played pretty well. Zverev serving reasonably. In his singles, he's basically serving two aces for every double fault at the moment. And he's had a couple of, you know, he pushed Djokovic today to a third set, won the first. But, yeah, I would say Djokovic looks good generally, and it was a fun doubles. They really have nailed the presentation with this sound and the teams and all the stuff you hear. It's a very visceral tennis experience for television. They're the ones who've done that side of things the best that I've heard.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite genres of tennis match. I think a doubles involving an absolute top singles player, you know, a real great. And their partner being someone lower ranked, because I just think it creates a fascinating dynamic both ways. The lower ranked player is really under pressure and you feel the stress on their face to try and live up to their partner's greatness. And in Novak Djokovic's case, you see him sort of trying to coach the player through it or take all the shots themselves and not get annoyed, perhaps, when the partner can't rally with Alexander Zverev from the back of the court. And on top of all that, you had this extra layer of intrigue for Djokovic, which is, yes, he cares about the ATP Cup. He wants to win it. He loves playing for Serbia. But essentially, it is his Australian Open preparation. And it is therefore, because it's a team competition, it's not all in his own hands. He is relying on some teammates to try and make it through that competition and give him the matches he needs and he wants. And I'm certainly not suggesting that Djokovic is not ready for the Australian Open because Serbia are now out of the ATP Cup. as David says, he looks to be playing really well. He's won both his singles matches. He's in good shape. But part of me does wonder whether he really wanted to play some more matches this weekend, especially singles. He would have played Medvedev. He might have played Nadal if Nadal was fit and played the final. Bautista Agu, perhaps. And I don't know. It's all tied up with his preparation for the Australian Open. And there was some real stress, I think, when they didn't win that doubles. He really wanted to make the weekend.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Which suggests that given that the Australian Open is his main priority rather than winning the ATP Cup, in all honesty, that suggests that he would have liked at least one more singles match.
Mm.
The fact that he was seemingly pretty desperate to win that doubles, to the extent that poor Nikola Kacic, perhaps felt the pressure a little bit more than he'd have liked. Bless him. But that's the ATP Cup semi-final lineup. Those matches to be played starting late tonight UK time, going into the morning.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast. Alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This morning at 5 a.m. UK time, when Mac was wide awake trying to get round some inconvenient geo-blocking, the Australian Open draw took place. And it is fascinating, particularly the women's draw. I think given everything we've discussed about the women's tournament at the moment, the continuing narrative of Serena Williams, the sheer volume of other genuine competitors, the number of sort of pairings that are on the cusp of developing great rivalries, the sort of comeback stories of Andreescu and Muguruza to an extent as well. It's so tasty. And there is a bit of disparity in the draw. In the top half, you've got Ash Barty, who's the top seed, obviously. And then you've got Kenin, the defending champion. And then it's Pliskova, Svitolina, Azarenka, Sakkari and Mertens. So contenders in there, but certainly kinder, I would say, than this set, which is in the bottom half. You've got Bianca Andreescu, Naomi Osaka, Serena Williams, Garbiñe Muguruza, Simona Halep, Irina Sabalenka and Iga Świątek. Which half would you rather be in?
I'd rather be in the top half, although I still don't think I'd give myself too much chance of winning it. It's amazing. The number of players that make you go, she could win it. Or, you know, it's just the bottom half of that draw in particular is just absurd. They're not just good players, they're stories. Each one of them are stories. Each one of them are potentially major winners a number of times over this year or have been several times, or in the case of Serena Williams, 23 times in the past. So I think the women's draw, as I kind of thought it would be, just because of how many people on paper look exciting, is way more interesting than the men's draw. There are some matchups that I'm looking forward to in the men's draw, but the women's is just a who's who. Yeah, I mean, even the first round, Catherine, there's some corkers.
Yeah, there are. In the top half, Putin Saver against Sloane Stephens, Azarenka against Jessica Pegula, Karolina Mukova against Yelena Ostapenko, Coco Gauff, rematch her against Jill Teichmann, who she beat this week in a tournament, brackets unspecified. Maria Sakkari against Kiki Mladenovic. Mladenovic, who sort of just always seems to be picked out in an interesting first round clash, because she's invariably these days unseeded, and yet she still sort of occupies this place in our minds where we think she ought to be seeded. So we usually think that she is a sort of dangerous person to draw in an opening round. We've got the projected route for Ash Barty through to the final, and fairly straightforward-ish. Alexandrova possibly in round three, through to the quarterfinals, where it's a sort of maybe Bencic, maybe Mertens, maybe Pliskova lurking. But then semi-final, you could have a Kenin, a Brady, a Sakkari, an Azarenka, or a Svitolina. The final, her possible final opponents. Have there ever been so many slashes? You've got Osaka, Serena, Muguruza, Andreescu, Halep, Świątek. I mean, it's just mouth-watering.
Dare anybody pick a winner for the tournament from the bottom half?
No, certainly not right now.
That's going to be interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, the name still that jumps out for me is Osaka, because she's...
And yet her first round's horrendous.
It really is. She's got Pavlyuchenko in the first round, then... I mean, the whole draw is...
She could have Caroline Garcia in the second round. I mean, she needs to get herself seeded at Slams pronto. It's ludicrous that she's not.
There's some amazing unseeded players at this tournament. Sloane Stephens is unseeded.
She could have Ons Jabeur round three, Osaka, and then Muguruza or Kerber. I mean, it's hideous. It's a hideous draw.
But Osaka came into her press conference today knowing the Australian Open draw. She had seen all these projected paths, and she said, first of all, projected paths never pan out as they are.
Glad you both woke up early to crack on with those then.
And I like a tough draw. So if it does pan out, I'm fine. Like, and that is true.
I really
believe that. She plays her best tennis against top players. She always does.
She's somebody with an inbuilt sense of occasion and sense of the moment. And sense of ability to rise to both.
Yeah. And when she's gone when she's gone deep in big tournaments, she's won them, basically. Mm. Her record at the deep end of slams and big tournaments is fantastic. I love the way this draw has panned out, because it leaves both halves really open, because you've got a lot of players on the cusp of something in that top half, or with perhaps little doubts over their Grand Slam performances. And then, as we've said, the bottom half is just chock full of people who've been there and done it. I mean, Venus Williams is in that bottom half. There's another seven Grand Slam titles in that bottom half who we've not even mentioned. I mean, she's probably not a title contender anymore, but, you know, she's in there. She's yet another legend, another name. It's a fantastic draw.
Notable first round clashes from that bottom half. We're not sure which half will play on which day yet, but Su Wei Shea against Svitlana Peronkova, with the winner very likely to play Andreescu. I mean, crikey.
Stylish and matches, huh?
And I was interested to read Andreescu say that it had pretty much always been her intention to pull out of the tournament before the Australian Open.
Whatever that tournament ended up being.
Yeah, she basically said she's thought a lot about her scheduling, and she thinks she's made some mistakes in the past that have resulted in some of these injuries that she's picked up.
She's only played about three tournaments in her life.
But yeah, and she's been injured in all of them.
So is her plan now just to play the slams? What a rock star.
Just win the Grand Slam every year.
Okay. Right. I mean, good luck to her. Marta Kostyuk.
I thought you were going to say she said, it's a good draw because I'm in the draw. Turns out not.
Marta Kostyuk. Against Victoria Kudermetova. They played a great match in Abu Dhabi. So that's tasty for first round. Katie Bolter, who seems to be in great form. She's playing Daria Kazatkina in the first round with the winner, very possibly to play Sabalenka. Very difficult to know whether Sabalenka is a good draw or a bad draw, isn't it? But we won't get bogged down in the Sabalenka weeds just now, because the men's draw, of course, has also been done. Top half Djokovic, of course, is the number one seed. He is in that half with Alexander Zverev, Dominic Thiem, and Diego Schwartzman, the other big seeds in his half. Also there are Stan Wawrinka, Milos Raonic. They would be potential fourth round opponents. Dominic Thiem would be a semi-final opponent, and of course projected Rafael Nadal in the final, but we'll talk more about that in a moment. What do we think of Djokovic's draw and that half in general?
Well, what about Riley Opelka, his potential third round opponent, 7 foot tall?
Yeah, we did this earlier and I whizzed through Djokovic's draw and I said, I don't think it's that good a draw. You know, Wawrinka is a nightmare opponent for him. He wouldn't have wanted to be in the same half as Dominic Thiem. And David said, yeah, and Opelka.
Yeah, and I'm saying
he's,
it again.
He's got a great serve. And I sort of said, massive. Yeah, but he's got the best return in the world. And I accused you of tall man bias. And we're back where we were, David.
Yeah, I'm quite happy to go with that. It's fine. Me and Riley. Yeah, but given the way Djokovic deals with Raonic, yeah, I can see the problems. But I'd quite like to see that match. Taylor Fritz, though, may take out Opelka.
I mean, I imagine David Five Live will assign you to it. So you're in luck.
Without question.
And if Opelka somehow does upset Novak Djokovic, he could play Raonic in the next round, which you're definitely on.
That's got your name written all over it, David.
Yeah, but I don't want to watch that.
imagine David Riley Opelka against Borna Coric.
Do I have to?
Okay, good draw or bad draw? Long story short, quoting Taylor Swift again, good draw or bad draw for Novak Djokovic?
I don't think it's the greatest draw in the world. I think it's quite a tough draw for Novak Djokovic. And it's quite funny how the respective fan bases of these players will jump up usually and say, oh, it's not fair, my man's got a terrible draw. I would say that Djokovic has got a pretty tough one there, relatively speaking. What do you think, Matt?
I think it's a pretty good draw. I think it's a pretty good draw. I think all the top players in the men's have actually got fairly good draws. I don't look at anyone's draw and think that's a nightmare. And that's maybe my big takeaway from this men's draw, is it feels quite balanced because we're back to not having a big four, but we're back to having four who stand out above the rest, I think. Obviously, there are concerns about Nadal, but
those being Thiem and Medvedev, the extras?
Yeah, joining Nadal and Djokovic. And, you know, for years we had men's draws where you looked at four names and sort of penciled them in. And, you know, invariably one of them would go out or a couple of them would go out. But basically as a pack of four, they were pretty reliable. We're not in that territory yet, but I look at Medvedev and I look at Thiem and I certainly think if they play well, they will match their seeding and possibly have a chance to upset Djokovic and Nadal. So to me, it feels quite balanced in a way that it didn't when Murray dropped out of the big four because he was injured and Federer has been missing for the last few slams, you know. So I think it feels quite familiar in that sense to what we had for many years.
Yeah, Medvedev is in that bottom half with Rafael Nadal. Now, we've got here Nadal's projected route through to the final, but maybe we should look at that through a completely different lens. Is Medvedev... Look, I know he's won zero Grand Slams and Nadal has won 20, but is Medvedev at this stage a safer bet in that section than Nadal, who we've put on the alarmometer at an 8 out of 10? Or certainly, should we be looking at as Okay, the top seeds in that bottom half are Nadal, Stefanos Tsitsipas, Daniil Medvedev, Andrei Rublev. Is this, you know, a slam for the breakthrough of Stefanos Tsitsipas into a Grand Slam final, possibly even Andrei Rublev? You know, should we look less at it from a this is Nadal's potential route, or is that premature?
Well, I am slightly regretting not doing my Medvedev possible route to the final now, yes, because I only did Nadal from that half the draw. And I have to say that, yeah, I think I'd put it at less than 50-50 now, really, for Nadal versus Medvedev. I'd say Medvedev's more likely to get to the final than Nadal, yeah, given where we are right now with the knowledge we have right now.
Do you think? Yeah. I'd agree. He's on a 12-match winning streak, Medvedev. He's beating everyone, and Nadal's not even playing. So, you know, as David says, that knowledge we have now puts Medvedev right there alongside Nadal, if not slightly ahead of him. But if Nadal's okay and he can build some momentum, of course, he's still a force.
First round matches to pick out on the men's side. Corentin Moutet against John Millman, friend of the show. Hello, John.
Sensation.
The sensation that is John Millman. Grigor Dimitrov against Marin Cilic, which feels like a sort of yesteryear battle.
Queens match from 2012 to 2017.
Yeah.
2014 relived.
Speaking of which, Kei Nishikori against Pablo Carreño Busta. That's a match I've definitely seen before at the Australian Open.
Will we see a racket bag hurled lengthways over the court in anger by Pablo Carreño Busta? Was that the US Open, Matt?
No, it was the Australian Open. Yeah. Speaking of out of character, it's one of the most extraordinary
unexpected
things.
High drama in a Kei Nishikori Pablo Carreño Busta match. And I sort of hinted at this earlier, Denis Shapovalov against Yannick Sinner. That is mouthwatering. I think Sinner's winning that.
See, the way you've just now dumped Denis Shapovalov and picked up your new man, Yannick Sinner, I find a little bit disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, I undeniably have done that. Yeah.
I can be
re-persuaded. I just need to see something different from Shapovalov.
Right, so who's going for Sinner? Who's going for Shapovalov? Sinner?
Sinner for me.
Matt?
Well, on the podcast earlier today, Catherine said we didn't have to make predictions until Sunday because the weekend's results could influence things.
And I meant big predictions.
Yeah, but Sinner is involved this weekend. If Sinner has some sort of epic against Karen Khachanov and is a shell of a man, then...
Well, yes, of course.
Then I'm picking Shapovalov.
Well, so am I... Okay, but right here, right now, Matt, come on, Sinner. You know the drill.
Sinner.
Dennis the Menace for me.
Does anyone call him that?
Greg Rozetsky does.
Did he? Does he?
Of course he does.
Oh, you and Greg, David.
It's Greg, me and Alan Partridge. That's it.
Medvedev against Pospisil is a first round. Stefanos Tsitsipas against Gilles Simon. I don't think Steph's going to have fun playing that match. I think he'll probably win, but I think I think it'll be giftable.
I think you're right. If Simon could get into that and be...
Irritate him.
Be sufficiently prepared and physically prepared enough to just irritate Tsitsipas into oblivion, I think that is quite possibly what he could do. I think Tsitsipas could blow a gasket. Mm-hmm. But I also think Tsitsipas is a good enough player to find a way if he can keep stable in his own mind.
Kevin Anderson against the very much informed Matteo Berrettini, Alex de Minaur against Tennis Sangren, and an all-Brit clash between Dan Evans and Cam Norrie. So that's your teaser taster of the Australian Open draw. We'll be talking more about it. We'll be talking about our predictions. We'll be talking about what all the players have had to say in their pre-tournament press conferences when we record again with our official preview show on Sunday. There may or may not be a little bit of bonus Simon Briggs in that. We're trying to pin him down. He's a busy man, is Simon.
Yeah.
Edge of your seat for bonus Briggs on Sunday. That's when our next podcast will come to you. And then, of course, from that point on, we are daily throughout the Australian Open. Thanks to all of you that backed us on our Kickstarter campaign. Just a couple of last bits of business for this pod. Tennis lost a great champion yesterday, Tony Trabert. He died at the age of 90 at his home in Pontevedra, Florida, reported the tennis journalist and broadcaster Richard Evans. He said Trabert was huge for the game because he did so much for it. Champion, Davis Cup captain, director of the Cramer Pro Tour in Paris, CBS TV analyst and mentor to many, RIP Wimbledon champ. And Billie Jean King paid tribute to him as well. She said, on the passing of the great American tennis player Tony Trabert, I am deeply saddened to learn of the passing of one of my heroes. He was the first athlete I asked for an autograph, and I remembered the moment at the Los Angeles Tennis Club where he took the time to speak with me. Over the years, our relationship grew deeper, and he was a wonderful mentor in tennis, in broadcasting and in life. We even won a doubles title together in 1975 in Scottsdale, defeating Margaret Courtin's Frank Sedgman 6-4, 6-2. This earned Tony $10,000, the biggest tennis paycheck of his storied career. He was a legend and a friend. So a lovely tribute there from Billie Jean King. I wouldn't have known who Tony Trabert was had it not been for Tennis Relived, because I remember when we were reliving the French Open men's final of 1984, Tony Trabert was there in the crowd because John McEnroe, who of course lost that match in five sets to Ivan Lendl, was aiming to become the first man since Tony Trabert to win the French Open title. So he was there that day and he was picked out by the camera a lot, and he was referenced by Bud Collins, who was in the commentary booth. And I know Mary worked alongside Tony Trabert in the commentary booth as well and had only warm words to say about him. So he lived to a good old age, but it's still a sad loss to the tennis world. And on a more upbeat but similar note in terms of loss to the tennis world, Tom Tebbutt, the esteemed Canadian tennis journalist, is retiring. He's worked for the Globe and Mail, for Tennis Canada. He's been a mainstay of press rooms since I've worked in the sport, and long before that as well. And he's just one of these part of the furniture, isn't he, David? And he's not going to be there anymore.
It'll be strange. I mean, I hope he isn't a stranger completely. I hope he comes back just socially and watches the sport. He loves the sport. He loves tennis. And, I mean, he's been covering it for more than 40 years. And he was really welcoming to me when I walked in, you know, pretty green and not knowing anybody. And he was always good company and not afraid to ask difficult questions as well. I mean, it's not an easy job sometimes, that. And he did it with great aplomb, and yet never lost his love for the sport and his respect for it as well. Really did cover it superbly well.
My tribute to Tom Tebbutt, I'll repeat this from version one, is that I could scarcely believe that he was old enough to retire. Initial reaction upon hearing the news was, he's not old enough to be retiring.
No.
So enjoy your retirement, Tom, with your full head of hair.
Still got less grey hair than me.
So that's it for today. Our mascot for the week is Chester, the lovely Battersea Rescue Cat. David's mascot is Rogue. Matt's is Scousel Mousel. Mine is Zeus. Billy Jean's, who is asleep at my feet, having contended with a robot vacuum cleaner for most of the afternoon. Her sponsor is Billie Jean King. I'll just say that casually, like it's a normal thing. Chris Albert Lee is our executive producer. And we have shout outs that we've got to try and make sound spontaneous. Off you go, Matt.
Yes, for Jessica Schaefer.
Ooh. Do you know
Jessica?
Do you know what Jessica Schaefer sounds like?
Oh, go on.
I have no idea.
This was genuinely spontaneous earlier. It's all ruined. She sounds like she might be in-house counsel at a Fortune 500 company, wearing pencil skirts and a silk blouse.
Yeah. And it was a hoot the first time, and it still is. Thank you very much, Jessica.
Oh, yes, dear. Thank you, Jessica. And thank you to Fiona Hanstock as well.
Hello, Fiona. I'm going to spare you what I said in version one because it was rubbish. So I'm just going to say hello.
How do we spell that surname, by the way?
H-A-N-S-T-O-C-K.
Exactly as sounds, David.
Yeah. All right. Well, just checking, making sure I get it right. Fiona, you're a legend. Thanks.
And finally, Lisa Tomlinson.
Oh, thanks, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa.
That's T-O-M-L-I-N-S-O-N.
Now that's cleared up, we are going to go and desperately hope that this thing is recorded. If you're listening to us, then obviously it has, and we hope you've enjoyed. We'll be back on Sunday with another Australian Open preview. We'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.